pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to this hour number two of the Jeff Poor Show on this Tuesday morning. So good to be with you. Thank you for listening. Still to come on the program, Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Hossmack. He will be with us at the bottom of the hour. Also on the program today, Congressman Mike Rogers from Alabama's 3rd Congressional District and State Representative Shane Stringer. So a lot coming your way. Make sure you stay tuned. Let's move on to some other topics here. We'll talk about football and whether or not we were going to see college football in 2020. Another politician you could add to the list of hashtag let them play. Robert Aderholt saying that he wants to see that the players are safer, he argues, than going back home. That's perhaps the case. They are perhaps safer than going back home, but are they safer if they stay and don't play football? I don't know. That doesn't seem to be as compelling of an argument as, hey, these are grown adults. Most of them are 18. They're voting age. They can be drafted to go to war. If they want to play football, it's their personal decision. Treat them like adults, not like children, but such a paternalistic society we live in, they're not really being given that choice. It's just not safe, or, well, as a lot of it is, it's lawyers saying, there's too much risk here. You could get sued. I would see maybe you could think about a way to protect yourself legally. So be it. But think about college football this way. If this goes on and this happens, would we see college football show up somewhere else? Might we see some rogue league pop up for college seniors? I would hope the NCAA gives another year of eligibility, but who's going to want to stick around for that? So there will be repercussions for any league or any conference that decides to cancel the football season. I think you'll still see Army and Navy play each other. I think you'll see Air Force Academy. I think you'll see the service academies do something. But these conferences go in that direction where they say, we're not doing this. And just wait, guys. Something else will come along. The market, there's market forces here that will say, we'll find a way to do football, and people will go look for it some other way, rather than being told they can't have it. Because a lot of that is that. It's you need to suffer. You need to realize elections have consequences, and a consequence of your election, of your choice, it's you're not going to get football because Donald Trump didn't tell you to wear a mask back in February or whatever. And that's absurd at face value. But that seems to be the wisdom behind a lot of this and the push for a lot of this. I would argue that's what's going on. Let's talk elections. Yesterday we had John Merrill on, Secretary of State of Alabama. Said he anticipated every record being broken in the state for voter participation. I certainly think that's true. Going to be true for absentee ballots. It remains to be seen if that will be true for the general election. There's some fear out there about COVID, but we are at such a highly politicized time that people are going to want to go out and vote. Even in Alabama, you'll have a lot of people going out to vote. Here's the fear, guys. Might it take days or weeks? You know, some places are going to go with this vote-by-mail system. Is it possible that we don't know who the president-elect is on November 4th, the morning of? Because ballots haven't been returned or haven't been counted. There is a lot up in the air about how that election on November 3rd is going to go. It's not going to be instantaneous. And that's where I think you'll see some unrest, some turmoil. Even in the event of, Donald Trump wins, oh no, we're going to go out and loot and riot. The longer that goes, and I think this is certainly a possibility, the more antsy people will get. And the more people will get on edge on both sides of the aisle, both persuasions. You got some chaos. We already have a crisis of trust of our institutions in America. People don't trust politicians. They don't trust the media. They don't trust health professionals that tell them to wear a mask or social distance. It's they're not filling out their census because they just don't trust the government. How are they going to feel if this election goes haywire and these things have been decided by very thin margins? That trust continues to erode. It's not good. It's not good, and it's the trust. That trust didn't have to erode the way it has, but everything is so politicized. Why not bank on that? Why not dine on, you know, these media outlets that used to be the standard bearer of the news? They were the gold standard. You didn't, if it was in the New York Times, you could trust it. You knew that word was good as gold. It was solid. Washington Post, not so much cable news. But they've been dining on that. But they've been using that trust, that equity, to try to politicize everything and turn politics a certain way in their favor. And I think, you know, people now say, I don't trust anything the New York Times says. It's a liberal rag. Where does that come from? Well, it's of their own doing. Print media in this country is facing a crisis. These legacy outlets that we could knew we used to could trust, that we knew that when they printed it, it was real, because you had the best of the best working at these papers. You had these Ivy League people. They had the best professors. They knew how to do everything, dot an I, use a comma, call sources, keep people off the record. And they still made mistakes along the way, but and maybe they did lean left, but you knew you could trust it. Not so much anymore. The times have changed. Times have changed in a big way, and it goes from the media, and it goes from the seriousness of the threat of COVID-19 and the way it's being hyped up, and it doesn't help with that. Something that impacts everybody's lives. Because usually we have these political discussions. Let's be honest. A lot of it is professional wrestling. It doesn't really impact your life. Like Benghazi. Remember Benghazi? How much did Benghazi really impact you? Your day-to-day life. But yeah, we carried the hearings wall-to-wall. Let's think of impeachment, for example. That's another, you know, Ukrainian wrongdoing or something. Yada, yada, yada. You tuned it out. It didn't really matter. It was just talking points for political reasons. With this pandemic, this impacts your life. This impacts your livelihood. This means you got to wear a goofy-looking mask when you go to Walmart or you get shamed. This means you can't go do the things that you used to enjoy. Maybe you like to go out places. It impacts your life. But you see who's telling you why you must act a certain way. And you see you know, the media shaming people. It erodes that trust. So, you know, with these distrust in institutions, election night, if it's not on the up and up, there's a chance for some real turmoil there. I believe that to be the case. Watch for that. That is going to be a bigger deal than we think this far out. Here it is on August the 11th. Are they ready for it? I think they're ready for it in most states. But there's so much on the line. People want to be in power. Might a box or two go the wrong way, and then we're crying foul, and people don't have any trust in their election and their civic processes. Then what happens? The stock market tanks, consumer confidence erodes. Yeah, a lot of things can come from this. There's a lot of consequences that could come from a distrust in who's in charge in the country. Also, push underway by a few members of the legislature and Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter, and Senate Majority Leader Greg Reed want to see a presidential debate in Alabama. The fourth presidential debate come to Alabama. I got to give it to him. A fourth presidential debate probably isn't going to happen. Well, I say probably. It's not going to happen. Just be glad we have 1, 2, and 3 in a vice presidential debate. But the fourth one, they would like to see in Alabama. I guess it's as good as any place to do it. There are you do have a good demographic mix. It is kind of representative of, although not numerically, the mix is representative of what the Democratic Party is and perhaps what the Republican Party is. But noble gesture from those guys, probably also not going to happen. Let's see. The Russians have a vaccine. Are you looking forward to the Russian vaccine of Vladimir Putin? Would you take that? I'm probably going to wait till they... I'm probably going to wait for another vaccine to come along, to tell you the truth. But it sounds like they got a vaccine. The Russians lie about everything, as Dan Gaynor said in that last segment, last hour. But more and more of these countries are going to come. The race for the vaccine, it is a very hot race. You wonder how that's going to play out in Mother Russia. I'm sure there's already talk of some kind of conspiracy theory or something, but that one, I think even the most optimistic person on the direction of the pandemic is thinking, I don't know about this Russian vaccine. But good news for them, I suppose, if they take that at face value. Did you see this executive order over the weekend, Trump offering unemployment benefits? But it was going to be done through this sort of matching program. States had to put up a certain amount of money, and it would be like a 3-to-1 mix. Federal government, the 3, and the states, the 1, or it would be something like that, with CARES Act money being put toward unemployment benefits. The problem is, a lot of states, including Alabama, they can't do that. They don't have the matching. That's the whole problem with like the whole discussion about expanding the Medicaid rolls. Expansion of Medicaid is like the crown jewel of the crown for Democrat rule in Alabama forever. Because every time a Democrat runs, we're talking about expansion of Medicaid. And it's not that Republicans in this state don't want people to have health insurance. It's that they don't want to pay that matching component, as small as it may be, state budgets. They don't want to have to borrow. You know, they have to meet a certain criteria to get the budget passed, and you start taking money out of that for Medicaid expansion. Well, then that is why you see Republican opposition. I dare say this, even if you had Democrats in charge of the legislature, they wouldn't want to let go of that money. A lot of things you could do with I've heard anywhere from $150 to $300 million annually. A lot of things you can do with that money, other than provide health care. That is the reluctance on the part of the state to join that. And I think these unemployment benefits, well, it's like I said, another one of these noble gestures from the president. I see a lot of states say they can't afford it. I think most states say they can't afford it. So will that be enough for Trump? I guess at least he's doing something. It does seem as if Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer are going back to negotiate. It's all perception. It's all smoke and mirrors. If the president looks like he's doing something, and they look like they're asleep at the switch, then they start talking, and then they start trying to get movement. But the so-called Heroes Act that Nancy Pelosi put out and the House Democrats put out, it's a non-starter. There's so much in there for other things unrelated. The favorite talking point for Republican politicians is how many times they talked about legalizing marijuana and pot and cannabis versus jobs. And it's mentioned like 20 times they mentioned marijuana, but they never mentioned jobs and getting people back to work in Nancy Pelosi's version of coronavirus relief. I mean, it's a problem. It's that perception there. So whenever you hear politicians, and at least Doug Jones, our Democrat U.S. Senator, hedges a little on this, say it's a good framework, but it's not quite where it needs to be. If we're serious about this, and I'm not sure that A, we're serious, nor B, that you really want to do this before an election, why not put something that's reasonable out there instead of a messaging bill, Nancy Pelosi? All right, guys, got to take another break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Because Music Row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?
sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good to be with you today. Still to come on the program in the bottom of the hour. That's in the next segment, actually. Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Hossenbach will be with us. Congressman Michael Rogers in the 11 o'clock hour as well. State Representative Shane Stringer. A big show for you still to come. Vice presidential pick. Still hearing a lot of Susan Rice out there. I think for Republicans, you're watching this, and whoever the VP pick is, you can't go wrong. There's plenty to criticize about all the hopefuls there. Some more than others. The one thing I think you need to watch with the VP pick is, does the pick bring together the Democratic Party? Does it bring together that Bernie Sanders wing and the AOC wing to where we are now with the, I would say, the Democratic establishment still controls, still runs the Democratic Party? You had all these aspiring hopefuls in the Democratic primary. You had a big slate of candidates. Everyone thought, well, the front runner is probably going to be Joe Biden, and he was a terrible candidate throughout the primary. Then just like the flip of a switch, out of the blue, he's the presumptive nominee. Because he wins one state, everyone else, well, you need to get out. And there were some deals cut there, I am sure. They said, hey, Amy Klobuchar, who was running, looked like she could maybe pick up a state or two. If you get out of this race, you could be a cabinet secretary. Peter Buttigieg said the same thing to him, who was doing really well. Bernie Sanders, they made that pact, the progressive manifesto, or whatever you want to call it, that's going to make Joe Biden the most progressive president since FDR. None of that's going to happen. I mean, Congress can barely keep the lights on, right? But that is that's my feeling on that is that you're not gonna see a lot of this. But the hope is you could just do it by putting somebody into VP splat, getting them to appease that segment of the party and rekindle that excitement. So that is that remains to be seen. I still think they're going to go safe. They're going to go with the safe ploy there. It will be Kamala Harris. Why wouldn't it be? What are the negatives? What are the positives? The negatives are, well, she's from California. Probably, if you're Democrat, already going to win California. You don't get much out of that. But it must be a woman of color that we know. That we know for sure. There was when we were talking about Amy Klobuchar, speaking of, she was a long shot candidate to go there to be VP, to be the running mate. But she removed herself from consideration because she says at this time in history, we need a woman of color, not just a woman, as a running mate. Okay. So that's all the signs are pointing to that. That would rule out Elizabeth Warren. So you got a few there. There's Tammy Duckworth. There is Karen Bass. There is Kamala Harris. And you're still hearing Susan Rice a whole lot. Susan Rice might be the worst possible scenario would be Susan Rice and Joe Biden, I think. Because Susan Rice she's more dangerous in that she knows how the city works, how the institutions and government work. And she's not afraid to use their powers, as we learned. From the unmasking, as we learned from the end of the Obama administration, we think we have an idea of what's going on there with the so-called Russiagate investigation and how that came to be. We have some notions about that, and Susan Rice was very much involved. But what does she bring to the table for Democrats and Joe Biden? So not that there's many Democrats out there that care what I have to say about it, but it's your best bet is going safe here. If you really believe the strategy to winning in November is this, that it's a referendum on Trump, and it doesn't really matter who you put up against him, and that seems to be the James Carvilles and the Paul Begalas and those types, and Trump's so bad, and they made this mistake at 16. Trump's so bad, he's not going to win. We could put up a sweet potato and still win the presidential election. Then if that is the prevailing wisdom among Democrats, why would you take one of these long shot picks? Why would you do anything crazy? So you look at that, those five I mentioned. Who's the safest pick? It's the junior senator from the state of California. Seems to be the sure thing. And we'll get rock star coverage for sure. Got rock star coverage during the Iowa caucus. And people say, well, you know, there was some friction there very early on between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. Well, how many presidential elections have we seen where the running mate and the president, where the running mate was a candidate in that same primary, not get along and then come together to get along? A few gray feathers. The famous one, George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan, right? We could go through John Kerry and John Edwards. There's plenty of examples out there. Got to take a break. We will return. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown, Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Tuesday morning to you. Still come on the program today in the 11 o'clock hour. Congressman Mike Rogers from Alabama's 3rd Congressional District. He'll be with us. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from State Representative Shane Stringer. He'll join us. So a lot of reasons for you to stay tuned. Make sure that you do. But joining us now, excited to have this my next guest. He is the sheriff for you folks over in Baldwin County. Huey Haas Mack joins us on the line. Sheriff, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How about you?
Doing well. Let's get into it. First off, how are things going in Baldwin County? I imagine there's a lot of challenges right now under these circumstances from a law enforcement perspective. How are you handling things?
Everything's going really well. As you know, if you look at the numbers as it relates to COVID, Baldwin County has been extremely blessed in the numbers that we have had, and the management team that we have had in place at our Emergency Management Association and all the other partners have done an excellent job. We have had our challenges, but everything is going really well. And right now, of course, we're getting geared up for schools to start in Baldwin County tomorrow. All of our SROs are up to the challenge. It'll be a new school year, a new set of challenges with that, but I'm confident that things are going to go well.
From your perspective, from a law enforcement perspective, and I guess all these precautions that are in place with mask and social distancing, what's that like doing your day-to-day job?
Well, you know, it adds another dimension to it, of course. When you're trying to, from the law enforcement officer perspective, you know, they're out there trying to do their job, and at times they do have to wear their mask when they're dealing with certain aspects of the public. And then when you're dealing with the public as well, we try to be very mindful of not only of the mask precaution, but of all the other precautions as well, the social distancing, the large crowds and everything. And, you know, one of the things that we deal with in Baldwin County is our transient population. So, we have a large population growing every day, but we also subject to have tens of thousands of people from other areas of the country here. And so a lot of it is just about information sharing and advising them of what we've got going on here in Baldwin County and how we're trying to manage everything.
Well, one of the unfortunate things going on in our politics right now, this anti-police movement, you don't really see it as much in Alabama, but you see it nationally. Dealing with that, especially with morale in the sheriff's department there, what kind of impact has that had?
Well, you know, it has definitely had an impact. We have not felt the direct repercussions of that, and what I mean by that, the actual protests or the face-to-face encounters and things of that nature, but we're very mindful of our brothers and sisters across the country that are dealing with it every day. So our prayers and thoughts are with them, And we're also mindful, too, once again, because of the transient nature of our county, we can have those situations that may pop up. Probably the one we had in Mobile a couple months ago there on the interstate was the largest, most challenging one that we had in this area. And my hat's off to Mobile Police Department and Chief Batiste and Director Barber. They handled that situation great. So we're mindful of it. We know that there's situations that can pop up from time to time. And, you know, it is a little bit disheartening. I think the majority, the overwhelming majority of the American public supports law enforcement and wants law enforcement. Unfortunately, the low minority that have issues and things of that nature tend to be the most vocal.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what the news picks up, and that's that. You wonder if do your deputies see that? I mean, like, does that something you have to remind them of, to be cognizant of, to be aware of, that there's this backdrop. Maybe you got to be more careful. You never know, who's videotaping or whatever. Or if there's, you know, somebody with some ulterior motives.
Absolutely, you know, we do, and part of our management team within the sheriff's office, you know, we have to make sure that our men and women are equipped, but we also have to make sure that they're emotionally and morally equipped as well. You know, that they, you know, this is a business that regardless. What you do, there's going to be people that are going to criticize what you do. However, in today's environment, that criticism can just flare up very quickly and flash. And, you know, whether it be a physical confrontation or a more verbal confrontation and things of that nature. So, you know, we stand behind the men and women of our sheriff's office and encourage them to always remember to do the right thing and take the high road and continue to do their jobs, and very proud of them. We have had very few, as I said, isolated incidences in Baldwin County, and I think to a large part, we have reached out to some of our communities, our minority community in Baldwin County. Myself and some police chiefs have had face-to-face meetings with them. We've discussed overall policies and practices of law enforcement, and so I do think that now when everything's going the way that it is, communication is a key.
Well, and the other aspect of this, we have, at least in Alabama, have seen a string of fallen officers killed in the line of duty. Obviously, that's something you're always, I would assume you're always is on your mind, making sure you could mitigate that as much as possible.
Absolutely. You know, last year was a terrible year in law enforcement and the state of Alabama. We had some very tragic and horrific deaths of law enforcement officers, and one of those was my good friend Sheriff John Williams up in Lowndes County. We referred to him as Big John, and just a tragic case. And so, you know, we very much are mindful of that, and that's why I say that not only do we have to equip our men and women in law enforcement with the tools they need to do their job, the vehicles, the guns, the electronics, and all those type things. But we have to equip them from a personal standpoint, too. And that's why, and I want to say a thank you, if I may, to our community. Our community has been so supportive of law enforcement in this area. I mean, there's not a day that hardly goes by that you can't pull up on Facebook somebody that's doing something for one of the 14 law enforcement agencies in Baldwin County, and that support goes a long way. It reminds every law enforcement officer of why they do what they do.
Now, Sheriff, you've been at this game for a while. You've been in this arena for a while, and you know, you see the defund police and all of these political movements, but then they tell you, well, there needs to be some kind of additional training. Are something of that sort. If you're looking at this right now, and there needs to be some kind of reform in policing, where would you start if you even think that's necessary?
Well, I think one of the things, Jeff, a lot of people that tend to throw out quick solutions usually have limited information. And, you know, one of the things that the public and some of these people that are wanting to introduce some of these changes need to understand the amount of training that law enforcement already is getting. I think a lot of times they don't understand that. You know, when I came to work in law enforcement in 1985, it was literally a six-week police academy. It was 6 weeks, and you were a law enforcement officer. So those deputies that we're hiring today, that academy is now 13 weeks, and then you have additional 12 weeks of training, this interagency training, and then there's continuing education that is required every year. And, of course, a lot of that education is de-escalation, how to deal with confrontational situations, how to mitigate a situation. And so our training has evolved from what I would call just the law enforcement side to more of the community side, building relationship side. And I would say that, you know, I don't think there's a profession that anybody could argue that doesn't always stand to be improved in one way or the other. And so, as the president said in his executive order in June of this year, you know, he wanted to see basically some consistency in law enforcement. And that sometimes is a little bit hard to achieve, because when you've got an agency of four police officers and you've got an agency of 4,000, it's sometimes difficult to try to make sure that training is absolutely the same. But I think it's an achievable goal. And I think the other thing that we'll see as we move forward is probably a little bit more of a consistency in the way that we do handle incidences such as what happened in Minneapolis. When you do have a situation such as that, an excessive use of force, things of that nature. And so I do expect to perhaps see some of that. I would just hope, however, that our federal government does allow the states to manage that. There's certainly nothing wrong with oversight, but, you know, we're going to probably have a different situation, different set of circumstances here in Alabama that we deal with in law enforcement than they would in a California or a Washington. So I do hope that that we're able to manage that more at the local level.
I mean, so much of that is a one-size-fits-all approach to centralize. There is a push, it seems, to centralize or do something to make a to take a you know, every solution approach, the one size fits all approach to our policing in this country. But I think every as you said, every circumstance and requires a different skill set, be it, you know, like you say, four members of that law enforcement apparatus or 4,000.
Well, and you, if you go back to the founding of law enforcement, all the way back to Norman Vincent Peale, that founded law enforcement, of course, from in England, you know, the concept of citizens on patrol was simply because you wanted community-based policing. Community policing is nothing new. It's a couple centuries old, but it's just more emphasized today. But the community wants that officer that lives in their community, that coaches the baseball team in their community, that goes to church in that community, because I firmly believe that every agency has its own identity, and that identity should be reflective of the community that it serves.
We're joined by Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Hausmack here on the program. Sheriff, I know you keep an eye on politics and what's going on. I think we last time I talked to you, we were actually in Washington, D.C. at the FAIR conference. Just your eye on what's going on, particularly here in the state with a U.S. Senate race going on. What are your thoughts about as we look forward to November?
Well, you always look, every election is important. I don't think you can say that there is no such thing as an unimportant election, but this one, in particular in our U.S. Senate race, is so important right now. Number one, just from the 3,000 foot view, the Republican Party can gain a seat back in the Senate. And as you know, you follow politics very closely. The Senate is the one body in our United States form of government that has an incredible amount of influence and power as it relates to legislation and to policy and to funding. And so it's very important that we regain that seat. From a personal perspective, of course, I'm voting for Tommy Tuberville. I hope that Tommy wins the race. When Doug Jones took office, I have to admit, I was a little bit disappointed because, you know, I've known Doug for years. He was a former United States prosecutor, and I was even familiar with some of the cases that he prosecuted in the Northern District. And since he's moved to Washington, he seems to have taken on a little bit more of that far-left philosophy in many areas, but certainly as they relate to law enforcement. And I feel if we're going to try to achieve some of the things that law enforcement needs to do to keep our country strong, to keep our country free, and abide by the rights of the citizens, we need to elect somebody like Tommy Tuberville to that seat.
I mean, there's so much on the line, I guess. I think a lot of people in November are going to vote law and order, especially here in the South. You see what's going on maybe away from this part of even the state. And the idea of law and order and policing, I think, moves up the list of priorities for a lot of voters.
It does, and I think you're going to see it in this particular presidential election. I think you're going to see it be more of an issue. In fact, I predict it's probably going to be one of the top three issues as the race really hones in on the final two candidates after the conventions. And so it's going to be more discussed than I think it probably ever has been, and at least maybe since the 60s and early 70s, I think it's going to be a major issue. And that's why it's so important that we maintain strong support for law enforcement. You know, just as recently as this morning, I was watching the story of the Seattle police chief stepping down due to the situation they're facing there in the defunding. And if you read the details about what does that defunding mean in Seattle, I mean, they are totally eliminating some of the key essential aspects of law enforcement in that town to reach, quote-unquote, a funding goal. And that's tragic. You know, law enforcement has come so far. In the 35 years that I've been in law enforcement, I've probably seen three complete different transitions in law enforcement in the way that we train, the way that we perform our job, the way we have accountability. And to do anything that takes back from that, whatever community does that's going to set that community back, and I'm fearful that there may be bad consequences that may happen because of that.
Sheriff, we're about out of time here. Before I let you go, folks over in Baldwin County got a question for you or need to get in touch. Is there a website or a place they could go?
Absolutely. Of course, we have a Facebook page, Baldwin County Sheriffs. They can go on that. They can either post or they can message. We do have a website, sheriff.baldwincountyal.gov. We also have a place where they can report situations, ask questions, and they can always call me. They can call my office in Baymanette, which is 251-937-0210, and we would be glad to answer any questions or help out in whatever way we can.
All right. Hey, Sheriff, thanks for making time for us. We got to do this again real soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and have a great day.
All right. That was Baldwin County Sheriff Huey Haas back here on the program. We're going to take another break. We will return. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Crazy. I'm getting hammered, sitting right here at the floor of Bama.
I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person cold. But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Let's see, 57 minutes after the hour. Coming up in the next hour, Congressman Mike Rogers from Alabama's 3rd Congressional District and State Representative Shane Stringer. So a lot of reasons for you to stay tuned for that third hour of broadcast excellence or something like that. So a lot going on here. So we know Nick Saban has weighed in on the college football season. So you Auburn fans out there, where's Gus Malzahn on this? I'm an Auburn alumni. That's just the best wall decoration I got in my house is my Auburn diploma. Where is Coach Malzahn on let them play? I just checking his Twitter account right now. As a tweet, it's August 6th. talking about Chandler Wooden. So, you know, I haven't seen a lot out of this. It's curious to me because if I'm a potential blue chip recruit or I'm a blue chip recruit, and I'm thinking, hey, you know, where am I going to play? Well, the SEC, it just means more. Well, fair enough. Nick Saban's willing to step out of line and say, hey, let them play. What about the other coaches of the SEC? Who's outspoken like Nick Saban? That's a good question. All right, folks, we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Living on the road, my friend, was gonna keep you free and clean.